meeting is being recorded.
All right, Baruch Hashem, the lady has sung the Star Spangled Banner. Let us roll. Today is Sunday. Let me figure out which month, April 18th, 2021. And here we are in the State of Israel with July weather, to put it mildly. A week ago we were complaining about the cold, and now we're complaining about the heat, but that's human destiny. I want to dedicate, there's one person who, so many people died that I know in this corona, but one person we didn't say a few words about, and that's Rabbi Yehuda Kellerman. Rabbi Yehuda Kellerman, who was rabbi during Israel West Hempstead, someone I met on many occasions, I knew him, spoke with him quite a few times, have many students in West Hempstead. And I have to tell you, he's a very unique individual. He was educated in the right-wing world. I don't believe he ever attended any branch of Yeshiva University. He was a fine Talmud Chacham, a posek. Rabbi Yashiv referred people to him for Psak Halacha. And he had the ability to actually get along and inspire everyone. It didn't matter where you were coming from. Just think for a minute, I think it was 10 years or so, he was rabbi of the Young Israel of Brookline. Young Israel of Brookline is not exactly a Lakewood institution. It's a bastion of YU, OU, Torah in the Western world. It's a bastion of the Rav's heritage, and he was very wonderfully received there. And from there, he went on to West Hempstead, and under his guidance, West Hempstead today is a major, major Torah center. And there was a certain chen v'chesed about him. I always felt this is a Rav. This is a pastoral Rav, a Talmud Chacham, a posek, all together in one personality. And as you know, he was injured in a car crash a number of years ago, which was very sad. He never really totally recovered. I believe he walked with a walker, a cane. And obviously, the body is only a human body, and corona hit, and the end result was sad. So I want to dedicate today, Shein, his memory. The family should know that there's one person, there may be thousands of others, but at least one Marbitz Torah who really appreciated and looked up to Rabbi Yehuda Kellerman. Yehei Zichro Baruch. Okay, now, I also want to mention, if anyone can help me on this, a student listening, Rabbi David Sukenik, heard me mention a number of weeks ago, quoting Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, the famous Rabbi Reisman of Torah V'das, where in a talk he gave, he spoke about Mr. Mendelovich making a requirement of the Rav to come to Torah V'das, that his wife should cover her hair. And he said there was no need to make that requirement. Halavai, the Rav would have gone to Torah V'das from his point of view, and they would all become part of the society there where women did cover their hair. Now, I heard that on a tape. It was sent to me, a recording. A number of people sent it to me. And he contacted me weeks later. Do I remember where I heard this and how he can track down a recording of it? Anyway, Yomo and I tried to go back in time, but we couldn't hit the nail on the head. If anyone can inform me or inform David Sukenik, drsukenik at gmail.com. I repeat, drsukenik at gmail.com. He's Mashkir Ruchani of the Joseph Kushner Hebrew Academy. Let him know. We touched upon a person last week, and it's interesting how much discussion this engendered. I mentioned if I were giving a introductory year course on responsa literature, I would base it upon four volumes. And two of them were volumes of Rabbi Solomon Freehoff. And Rabbi Solomon Freilach was a Reform rabbi in Pittsburgh. And I mentioned that his two volumes, I've gone through them many times. It opened the world of Response to Literature for me. And even though he was a Reform rabbi, every last syllable in those two volumes is in accordance with the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. How he remained a Reform rabbi, all right, that's a question beyond me. So I have to tell you, I asked whether anyone knows his children, his descendants. It's interesting to see if four generations later anyone is left as Jews and have any return to the authentic world of Jewish existence. And he married late. He was in his 40s. His wife could have even been older than him. The couple had no children. This is from the Wikipedia article, and I thank Rabbi Twesky and others who informed me. On a personal level, he was a direct descendant of the Baal Shem Tov. And that's not the first descendant of the Baal Shem Tov to wind up in the Reform camp. We have other examples as well. But freedom of choice in life, and I hope that the majority of living descendants of the Baal Shem Tov are living Torah Hashem Tamima. What's fascinating, and here I thank Rav Nachum Shmayahu Sazak, my dear student, who is a historian today. I think I've had a little bit influence on him over the decades we know each other. And as I mentioned to you, whenever Rabbi Freilach had a question, he would turn to Rav Leida, who was the ranking Talmud Chacham in Pittsburgh. Rav Leida was already a Galicianer, a Hungarish, or Austro-Hungary, that area, and he was a first-rate Talmud Chacham. I just came across his name last night reading a biography of Rav Shmuel Vuzna, who came from this area as well, the great Posek of Bnei Brak, the Talmud of Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, who lived to be 102, I believe. And Rav Wisna mentions Rabbi Leida. There's a whole footnote there, and you can see he was held in high regard. So the question of cooperating with Reform conservative rabbis, I'll tell you, on this level, I don't see any question. In my humble opinion, if anyone asks you a shaila, you're obligated to answer. But all right, there can be another point of view that you're helping a chveis misaili de avera, I don't know. But my own feeling is very positive. And I taught some of Rabbi Leida's descendants, he has many children all over Israel, descendants, Kanayin Hara. So Rabbi Sajak showed me that Yedidi Reb Heschel Shechta, in the Pininei HaRav, quotes that one time in the middle of the Shia, the Rav suddenly stated, I don't know whether my uncle Rav Velvela had Ruach HaKodesh, but one thing I can tell you, I heard a story, and that story shows he had Ruach HaKodesh. And what's the story? That one time a Europeish Rav, who was in America and doing good things in his community, visited Israel and came to visit Rav Velvel. And he gave his hand to shake hands with Rav Velvel, and Rav Velvel refused to shake hands, refused to give him shalom. And people said that Rav Velvel had Ruach HaKodesh, that he knew that this was Rabbi Leida, who was helping a Reform rabbi. Shesiah bidei harabbi harafami Solomon Freilach limsolo at kol hatochen amasa v'matn shekol otan atshuvot shekatav hu aleihem b'sifro ba'anglit v'al yedei zeh asohu, meaning he made Rabbi Freilach kilu l'mumcha b'shetach zeh u'leposek shel tenua harafami. Well, I don't know posek, they're not interested in halacha. But this is a critique brought down by Rav Heschel in the name of Rav Velvel, the Rav telling the story. On a personal level, I doubt very much if the Rav would agree with acting like this to Rabbi Leida or acting like this to Rabbi Freilach. But it's a very interesting reference in Panini Harab. The page is not given here, but you can find it in one of the last volume of Reb Heschel. There's an index. Talmudim did an index to all four volumes. And I imagine if you look up Velvel, Rabbi Leiter, you'll come with the exact page if you're interested. Okay, now I want to come back to what we were talking about. Chayav Adav Livsumei Vipuya Adalo Yada. So Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein sent me a quote from Rabbi Yehuda Amital, who was also, he was an Ungarisha. I don't think he was a Galician. I think he was more real Hungarian, not on the border over. He was more closer to Poland than the other part of Hungary. Anyway, Rav Yehuda Amital said about the Psak and the Ramah that one should drink a drop more than usual and then go to sleep. He said that's Zederich Tova Litvakim. In other words, Rav Amital dismissed it. That's not really for Chassidim and Ungarisha. It's for cold-blooded Litvakim like Aaron Rakefet. I would imagine Aaron Lichtenstein also did not get drunk on Purim. It's not conceivable to me. All right, so we have the critique from Rabbi Amital. Fine. In Emek Halacha, and this Yomo showed me, Emek Halacha was written by a Talmud of Rav Velvel here in Yerushalayim. Aryeh Pomeranchik was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Velvel. And he says over, there's a siman here in Sudat Purim, so he says over that there's a big difference between drinking on Yontif to drinking on Purim. Drinking on Yontif, if you see the Lashon, the Lashon of the Rambam, the whole purpose of drinking is to reach a level of Simcha. Simcha b'Hashem, Simcha b'Yontif, v'samachta b'chakecha v'yitach sameach. So that type of Simcha has a limit. Once you drink and you feel the Simcha, that's it. You shouldn't drink anymore. No chiyuv to get drunk. It's only a bus of the yayin on a chag to feel the kedushat the chag, the simchat the chag, the joy of the chag, kivala kadosh baruch hu. But on Purim, it's mishteh v'simcha, mishteh for the sake of mishteh itself. In other words, there's no other ulterior motive. You just have to drink because it celebrates the Jews drinking at the feast of Ahasuerus. And now we survived Ahasuerus, we survived Haman, so once again we have to drink for the sake of drinking to recall the miracle, but to recall the difference now our drinking compared to the drinking due to Ahasuerus. But this type of drinking already, the more you drink the better, the more you drink there's a kiyum of mishta. And therefore, one has the obligation to drink until he's drunk and can no longer drink. All right, interesting Divrei Torah. I mean, kenzach dingin, you can argue, but I cite it from the Sefer Emek Bracha. And let me just see if there's anything else. Oh, yeah. And my nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf, said, and he says, what does Purya mean in Aramaic? A bed, to go to sleep. It's a proof that the Ramah is correct. You have to drink and then go to sleep. And while you're asleep, lo yada. Finally, I want to mention, and this is just a side comment, a Talmud who had studied in Chafetz Chaim. If you recall, when I introduced the Gemara, Chai Benishtol Tzivir Bepuya, I said, first let's see how we would work out the simple pshat in the Gemara. And I spoke about Yeshivat Chafetz Chaim that was famous for spending endless time. They began a Daf Gemara. What do we think? How would we work it out? Then they looked into Rashi. It's not the way we learn. We learn, we look into Rashi right away. Once you look into Rashi, you go further, but you don't spend time. What do I think? How do I understand it? Even the Rambam, I don't have to tell you, anyone who learned with the Rav knows that the Rambam many times is a Peirush on the Gemara. You would take the Psak of the Rambam and his words would explain to you how he understood the Gemara. But in Chafetz Chaim, first it's what you think. So he wrote to me, this is not the only uniqueness of Chafetz Chaim. And he wrote something else, which I think I've mentioned over the decades, that Chafetz Chaim was the first of the, they're not Chabad, not NYU, but they were the first yeshiva to go into outreach all over the United States. Under Reb Chenoch Leibovich, the son of Reb David, branches began all over the United States. And they were famous for that ability to go to communities, open up yeshiva, get involved in Kiruv, and become entrenched where they were. You had Chafetz Chaim branches. Ultimately, nowadays, in the year 2022, Lakewood emulates Chafetz Chaim, which is admirable. In other words, here is Lakewood. No one ever dreamt when Reb Aaron established Lakewood that one day they would have outreach branches. Outreach branches meaning a regular kollel, a seder, a second seder, the third seder, teaching the community, working with the community, answering questions from the community, classes for the community. So Chafetz Chaim was the first in that type of yeshiva to really get involved in outreach. Also, he writes that in Chafetz Chaim there was a refusal to go along with the black and white uniform. Chafetz Chaim boys are known for wearing blue shirts. All right, here I have to tell you, this may be absolutely correct, but it doesn't make me happy, and I'll tell you why. I have two nephews who went to Chafetz Chaim, as it is today in Kew Gardens Hills, and they were in high school there. And if they didn't have a black hat, they were fined a dollar. And that bothered me, to me, you have no idea, because I grew up with the Rav, and with the Rav, all I can tell you was individuality was stressed. The black world could never understand this. Again, I refer you to that foolish eulogy in Jewish Observer when the Rav died in 93. And they criticized the Rav that his Talmidim is so different. Unlike the black world, where everyone has the same stempel of him, the same stamp. To me, that's the greatest compliment of the Rav. And again, I throw out the idea, if any of you have any intellectual curiosity, I mean, life is life. You eat, you drink, you sleep, you make a living. It's all important. But more important is the mind, what we accomplish, what we do. And if someone has any intellectual curiosity, take off a few good years, take the picture that Rakefet spent years on identifying everyone in that picture. It's published in Rakefet Aron, Chelik Dalid. Take the picture and do a volume, The Class of 1960 Revisited, and take the people in that volume, in that picture, what became of them. And it's an unbelievable story. You have there all the future leaders of right-wing YU, centrist YU, left-wing YU, ultimately Chovevei Torah. They are all sitting before the Rav B'dechilu Rechimu. And then try to understand who the Rav was. And it's a challenge. And the quicker you do it, the better, because unfortunately, I have to tell you, a lot of the people in that picture are no longer around to speak for themselves. Okay, now let's go further. And I want to show you an unbelievable source. Here we have a simple Gemara that Omar Rava, Chayavin Ish Lutzume B'Pura Adalo Yada. And then the Gemara tells a story about Rabbah, that he got so excited at the Purim Suda drinking, he had a guest, Rabbi Zeira, and he took a knife to Rabbi Zeira's throat and slaughtered him. The next morning, he prayed to God, Chiyat HaMetim, we had a miracle. The next year, he invites Rabbi Zeira to his home again, and Rabbi Zeira says, absolutely not. Not every year do we have a miracle. All right, a very fascinating Gemara. And if you look into the Dikdekei Sofrim, look into the Shinui Nischat, even in the Steinsaltz, you'll see that there's a whole question, who said what? Was it Rava? Was it Rabba? Rava, Rabba. And Reb Menashe Klein brings an open Gemara which sheds so much light on this Gemara and tells us clearly that it had to be Rabba. That's the correct Girsa, that it's Rabba who invited Rabbi Zeira and Rabba who slaughtered him. Why? And this is a fascinating Gemara which opens up a Pandora's box. Astrology. How much influence does astrology have upon us? Shabbat Kufnun Vav Amir Aleph. 156a. And that's a famous Gemara. Hai man de ma'adim yegeber ashe dama. That, and I'll read the translation, Schattenstein. Hai man de ma'adim, he who is born during the hour of Mars will be a man who spills blood. What? Mars? They picture Mars, planet is red. And if you're born while that planet is ruling, you will spill blood. Amar Rav Ashi, I umna, I ganva, I tabcha, I mohala. Rav Ashi says, what does it mean he spills blood? He'll be a thief. What does it mean, a thief? A highway robber, Rashi says, who occasionally kills. Or he'll be a sheichet. In order to be a sheichet, one has to be, it's said many times, if he wouldn't be a sheichet, he'd be a murderer. Midaf shechten, blood, kill, animal, take life. Or a mohel. I need not tell you a mohel. The famous stories about Reb Chaim Sandek. He faints. He sees blood. Not pleasant. Many people can't even look at him. We shield the women to keep away. To be a Sandek, you have to. You can't close your eyes. You're holding the baby. You can't play games. This is sakonet nefashot. Well, you see blood. All right, and then the Gemara continues. Rabba, Oma Rabba, Reish Bet Hey, Ana B'madim Havai, I was born during the hour of Mars, and yet I'm not a spiller of blood. How can you say this? And Abaye says to him, Manami Anish V'Kotel. And Abaye says to him, you also are a killer. You punish. And you look into Rashi, look into the Rishonim, look into the translation in Schattenstein, Odd Scroll. What does it mean? Rabbonim had power. This is a different question. Remember, I've given Shurim on this over the last, many times I spoke about it, but years and years ago, we have actually tshuvot where Rabbanim issued a death penalty. You issue orders, people have to listen. If they don't listen, there's corporal and capital punishment, al pi halacha. So you too are a spiller of blood. All right, I don't have to tell you, this opens a whole Pandora's box. Do Rabbanim really have this authority? And we find in the Tshuvot that during the period of the early Achronim, the famous Tshuvot HaMaram, which has been censored, I believe it's Kuf Lamed Chet, where Rabbanim actually issued a psak that a Moshe is Chayav Mita. And I need not tell you, in the modern world, this is Napoleon, with the Sanhedrin, he's saying to the Jews, do the rabbis have power, or is it the secular courts that have power? Of course, halacha l'maisa, in the modern world, you can't call dayanim murderers. They don't have this power. In the state of Israel, however, it could be, you can raise the issue very simply. A guy refuses to give a get, they can order him into jail today. A guy is in jail, refuses to give a get, solitary confinement. We spoke about this. It's a great achievement. The ladder is just a few years old. My daughter was involved. She testified in the Knesset, at the committee, that there are men in jail who are laughing. What can you do to me? You took away my bank account. You took away my license to practice medicine, to be an accountant, to be a lawyer, whatever needs a license. You took away my right to have a bank account, to have a visa. What are you going to do to me in jail? And today, only a Nav Beitin or a high-ranking police officer, an officer who works in the jail, can put the person into solitary. So you see, Rabbanim do have some corporal power in the state of Israel. But what do we see from this Gemara? Rabba is Rabba. Anyone who had a Girsa, it was Rava, it's incorrect. It's Rabba and Rebbe Zeira. And there are actually some Rishonim who learned Pshat when they said to Rabba, you too are a killer. They were referring not only to his authority as a posek, as a dayan, as a rav, they were referring also to what he did to Rebbe Zeira. So it's a fascinating Gemara. But this Gemara, and by the way, the question of astrology is an interesting question. We see more than once the Gemara in Shabbos, Ein Mazal Yisrael, the Gemara in Shabbos, what does it mean? Ein Mazal Yisrael, that astronomy plays no role. And here you see that astronomy plays a major role. If you're born under Mars, you're a killer, a sheikhet, a mohel, a thief. Or you're like Rabba, a dayan, ma'anish, or like Rabba, who suddenly went and killed Rebbe Zeira. Now, this tshuva of Rabbi Menashe Klein, so as I showed you last week, he comes up with a whole pshetel, which you might consider Purim Torah. Again, he says, Vahavein, understand me. And Jack tried to read into that. He's not that serious. This is Purim Torah. I don't know. Is he serious? Isn't he serious? But what an interesting pshetel that he got drunk. And when someone gets drunk, his real being comes out. This I saw the one time in my life when I was drunk in Lakewood and there were a few other fellas drunk. All we were talking about was Torah and Yirat Shemayim and influencing and learning. So our drunkenness at least had some positive element to it. Other people are drunk and Hashem Yirachem, what comes out of their mouths? So Rebbe Zeira, when he got drunk, what troubled him? Malek. And it fits in with this Gemara that I just quoted. Because he had this desire to kill, because subconsciously killing, blood, red, it all was within his bones, his subconscious existence, his psychological existence. So suddenly it dawned upon him, Rebbe Zeira is a Malek. If he's a Malek, slaughter him. How could Rebbe Zeira be a Malek? How did he make that mistake? And there, Rabbi Menashe Klein comes up with a pshetel that we dress up on Purim. I have to tell you, one year on Purim, I dressed up as a Rav. I had from the rabbinate yet when I was in Masada Kedushin, when I had a funeral. Ay, lo aleinu, I've lived a full life. I have yet a Hamburg. I had a tuxedo. I don't know what happened to it. I don't think I have it anymore. I may be wrong. But So one Purim I dressed up and I had a fake beard and I put it on and I knock on my parents' door in Givat Mordechai, 51 Shachal, and my father opens the door, Zichrono Livracha, and he doesn't recognize me. And it took me a few minutes how to speak in my voice until he realized it's his eldest son, it's Ani. But you can imagine, he saw Rabbi Zeira dressed up as a Malek. Kids dress up in the Haredi world. They dress up as soldiers, as policemen. So he dressed up as a Malek. He thought that's a Malek. He grabbed the knife and wanted to kill him. All right. The next year, he was very careful not to show his face. A miracle happens one year. We don't know if it's going to happen every year. All right. That's the pshat in the tshuva. Very fascinating. Is Jack right? Is it Purim Torah? Did he write it seriously? One second. I don't know. We can't decide. V'havein. What does he mean by havein? Figure it out. Work it out. Well, all right. The Gemara in Shabbos is a very strong proof. The Gemara I just quoted, a very strong proof that who Rabba was and what was motivating him. What does it mean, born under Mars? That we leave for, there was a Professor Zimmels in Jews College. He was an expert on this, on magic, on Chazal, astrology. Reb Tzvi Hirschhayer, Mavola Talmud, deals with this as well. Aaron Rakefet's simple mind has a lot of trouble understanding how Mars influences our behavior. But all right, this is an area of research that's beyond my litvisha head. Yes, Yomo.
If the problem was that Rabbi Zeira was dressed as a Malek, then next year he should have
dressed in
something else.
Should have dressed in something else?
It wouldn't be an issue.
Yomo's right. Yomo's right. Actually, some of the Achronim actually say that the next year he should have come and they should have been more careful. Maybe Rabbi Zeira was so poor that the only costume he had was their Malek costume. All right, we'll leave it at that. Now, another tshuva that deals with getting drunk on Purim, and it's very fascinating to whom it's written and what it gets involved with. I'm quoting now from volume Yudchet, which was published posthumously from his Kitvei Yad, volume Yudchet, Siman Shin Pei Chet. Shin Pei Chet. It's from 1986. And the tshuva is written to Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, Rav de Zichron Yaakov, Vachove Beitin Sedek de Edah Charedit. And these are the Fisher brothers, again, a very fascinating family. Three brothers, all great Talmidei Chachamim, the pride of Yerushalayim, of the Yishuv HaYashan. And each brother was a Dayan, a Nav Beitin, but in three different worlds. One brother, this brother here, was with the Eidah Charedit. Another brother was with Agudat Yisrael. And the third brother was with the Batei Dinim of the government system, essentially Tzionim Datiyim, accepting government interference, responsibility, authority, and support, etc. And this is the brother affiliated with the Eidah Charedit. I actually taught a daughter of one of the Dayanim in Michlala, and it's an interesting family. Not everyone has remained like their parents, but Baruch Hashem, l'kavod l'tiferet. So he gets a letter from Rav Fisher, evidently inviting him to a wedding. His son just got engaged. And also it's fascinating what you see published. Kibalti michtavo hayakal lefnei eisah shvuot, ומחמת איזה סיבה נאבד ממני ולא מצאתיו והלילה מצא אותו בני היקר ונתנו לי. And he got this letter from our fish, he put it aside, and he couldn't find it again. And his son found it just happened to find it and gave it to him, so he apologizes for the lateness in answering him. I have to tell you, in Reb Moshe's answer to my question about the Hitil and Mutala dealing with, I don't want to go into it again, but the Shaila that a guy named Aaron Yitzchak Rotkoff wrote to Reb Moshe, it appears in the first volume of Reb Moshe's Tshuva, in the first volume on Yoredeya. It deals with if a mezuzah might be puzzle, can you put up a second mezuzah and make a Tanai? If the first one is no good, the second one is the mezuzah. If the first one is good, the second one is a kishut ba'alma. Sort of like the Tanai we make on Tfilin and Cholomoyd and Chutzlaretz, according to those who follow the Rav Shita. All right, it's an interesting question. So in what's not published, Reb Moshe writes to me apologizing why his answering is late. Why is his answer late? It was the summertime. He writes, I was up in the mountains and I didn't see your letter until I returned home. So here you have the same thought. He apologizes, my son gave it to me now. What's fascinating, he says, the letter, his answer begins, in Hini Rishon Alevarei Chavuv No Shebole Kadeshet Halevana Bebirchat Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov. The way I understand that line, Kiddush Levana, which I just did last night, so you all know in Kiddush Levana at the end, we repeat a number of sentences, including Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom, etc. And why do we repeat? According to the tradition, these were part of the codes that people had when I worked in Russia for the Mossad. So it was fascinating. We took, the Mossad gave us a package of photographs. And one photograph had a picture of a baby sucking a milk bottle. And when the KGB caught the photographs, they would say, what do you say? It's my family. So they looked at the photographs and gave it back to you. When we had to deal with important messages with very important key people as far as the Mossad was concerned, and by the way, these people had no idea who was really sending the money, the guidance, the messages. I mean, they could guess, but they were never told. They only found out what Lishkat HaKesher, or Nativ, the branch of the Mossad that dealt with Russian Jewry, was about when they reached Israel. So one of the things I had to do, I'll give you a simple example, when I had money with me, a very substantial sum, and I had to give it to a doctor in Vilna. Again, I'm revealing secrets, but the security clause has been off now for almost 20 years. They took off the clause in 2002. And very fascinating. I had to give him, I think it was 50,000 ruble. How do I have 50,000 ruble, or the equivalent of 50,000 ruble? So it's very simple. This doctor's daughter had come in Aliyah, and she got married, and she wanted to buy a dirah. So he had to give me, I'll explain in a second properly, erase what I just said a second ago. So the Mossad bought the dirah for her. So technically she now owed the Mossad the equivalent of 50,000 ruble. Her father in Vilna had to give me the 50,000 ruble. So I come to Vilna, I get to the hospital. Malka always remembers the trip on the bus when we wanted to be sure on the right bus. So we're asking in our broken Russian, Malka's asking, is this the bus to the hospital? And a lady understood that we're foreigners, and she showed us she's holding a urine thing for a blood test. So she was telling us, da, da, you know, that you're on the right bus and get off where I get off. We get off, we find the doctor, we go into a secluded room, and I show him the picture, and I have to point to the baby sucking the milk from the bottle. And he knew that that was the symbol, the code, that we were reliable. And sure enough, he gave us the fifth, counted out 50,000 shekel, and that money I later distributed to the people running the classes in Vilna, I believe it was. This may have been in Riga. It could be I'm confusing Vilna with Riga. It's two different years, but it doesn't matter. And this covered their classes, their photography work. Remember, they couldn't use a Xerox machine. Everything was under government control. But what the Jews did, they had photography equipment, and they took pictures of the Gemara, of the Mishnah, and they could make 1,000 copies. They had a dark room, and it was private. The government did not know that this was going on. And this money covered all the printing and all the text and all the distribution for about a year. So this is the code. When you came, how do we know you're an aide? How do we know you're telling the truth? How do we know, Eli, that it really was a new moon? And they would say, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom, Shalom Aleichem, Simin Tov, Mazel Tov, Simin Tov. Right, what we repeat. So he says, I'm now being Mekadosh to Levana, I'm giving a Mazel Tov to you and a Mazel Tov to your father. Like I'm repeating it twice. Not the, it should have been thrice, actually, with our minig, but he's saying, this is the way I understand it. Shabo Lekadesha to Levana, Birchat Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov, I'm repeating it to you. There's something else here of interest, which I challenge you to do research and come up with the background of this. And he says, I'm Hinani Mishtatev B'Simchatchem B'Kiruv Lev, and I want to join with all my heart your beautiful Simcha U'B'Matana Mu'etet L'Daron Drasha. And he says, I want to give you a little gift for the drasha. And what is this? What is this about? And I'll tell you, when I was a kid, we went to weddings. It was called the drasha geshank. That in my time, and actually I'm only sitting here because of the drasha I gave at my wedding. If you want details, ask a special shechta. But I'm telling you the truth, absolutely. Look into Washington. Washington, I don't tell it exactly as it happened because I said no one will believe me if I'll say the Rav kissed me. I think I say in Washington the Rav hugged me. And it changed my whole life because I write that Mr. Abrams said, I told Dr. Belker what happened at your wedding. I looked at him and he said, we're going to make you at Rosh Yeshiva the first opening. And they kept their word 100%. So in my time, the Chatan always said a drasha. And when the Rav was sitting there, you never cut him off. The Rav felt that was a bizayin hatayra to cut off a chatan speaking the Vrei Torah. So the expression was, you gave a gift. You gave a gift for the drasha, a drasha geshank. And this is what he's saying. I'm joining you and giving a gift. Matana mu'etet ledoron drasha. Maybe sent a check for $36. Let's say, I don't know. We're talking 1984 money. And hagam ki ein hamatana gedola lefi kvod hamishpacha chashuva. And even though this gift is not on the level it should be for such an important family, mikol makom huba benidvat lev uba ahava v'yedidur. It comes out of generosity and love and friendship for the family. Okay. So very fascinating, he's writing this letter. Then he says, in other words, he's never asked the question, but he says, Kidei shalola hotzi haniyach halak, so I shouldn't waste the rest of the space on this paper. Let me write to you, may in yonadiyoma. And this letter was written right before Purim. Look at the date, in 1986. And he gets involved with the whole story of what we're talking about. How could Rabba do what he did to Rebbe Zeira? And how could, we're talking here, Amoraim Kedoshim. It's not the Israel society where Lo Aleinu every other day You hear about Jews shooting at Jews, Jews even killing Jews, beyond comprehension. And how could this be? And he gives a pshat here, very interesting. He says, what is Pesach all about? Pesach, we want to relive Yetziat Mitzrayim. And by the way, you should know that many of the Eidot HaMizrach are more pedantic in reliving. They actually get up in the middle of the Sudah, they walk out, they come back with carrying packages, like a person going on a journey. You should feel what it's like to leave Egypt. And this is the whole concept of Pesach. That's why we eat Mora, that's why we eat Matzah, that's why we eat Korech. To really celebrate Pesach properly, you have to have the ability not only to be an actor, but to feel the emotion. And he says, when we talk about getting drunk on Purim, we have to relive what the Jews went through, what the Jews did, how the Jews were happy citizens of Persia. Ahasuerus, the king, invites us to the Suda, Hashtiya Kedat, Eino Neis. They give you a choice, what to drink. No one forces you. And this is why we have the question, why we have the command, Chaya Vinish Lepsuri Lepuria. You have to feel it, you have to live it, and you have to be part of it, you have to recreate it. And you have to get drunk, like people got drunk at Ahasuerus Suda. If you don't get drunk, you're not really feeling the story of Purim. And here, on this Tshuva, page Tuf Resh Chet, at the bottom of the second column, he tells a story. Is anyone listening to me who's an expert on Napoleon? Bonaparte Napoleon, I don't have to tell you. You know how many books have been written about Napoleon? I once tried to do a little bit of a survey to try to find out. I was lecturing on the Napoleon Sanhedrin. And I wanted to find out, who was this Napoleon? I got to tell you, I read a few books. I started opening up the scholarship. You get two totally different viewpoints of Napoleon. One viewpoint, he was a great individual, cared about humanity, of course had a Napoleonic complex, that he thought his way of life, the French way of life that he was introducing, would be great for the whole world, it would civilize the world. He was a philo-Semite. He really, when he said he's going to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, he really meant it and he really wanted to. You get another opinion of Napoleon. He was like Hitler. He wanted to kill. He was self-centered. All he cared about was himself, and everything he said was for the sake of making Napoleon big and better. All right, who was Napoleon? He tells the following story. See, it's sad that he tells stories like this. He doesn't give a source. So if anyone can find the source for this, let me know. And here's the story. It's all there. Jack, indicate, you see Napoleon's name about the fourth line up from the bottom of the page. All right, Jack tells me I'm quoting it correctly. And what's the story? That Napoleon was saved. The enemy was chasing him. Napoleon was saved from the enemy by an individual. Now, I don't know what he's referring to. We have a tradition that we heard from the Rav many times over. It's been published many times over. A guy named Rakefet published it. Reb Heschel Schechter published it. We heard it from the Rav. If I heard it one time, I heard it 100 times. Yitzchak Rubin heard it 1,000 times. What was the story? It's a big shaila. How come in Chaslovich, which was a stronghold of Chabad, the Rabbanim were always Litvakim? The whole Soloveitchik family, including their uncle, Reb Nachum Karakovsky, everyone took turns being a Rav in Chaslovich. And tradition has it that Napoleon was running away in battle, and he needed shelter. And the Rav of Chaslovich, who was a Litvak, put him into his cellar. the opposing army knocked on the door, and they said, "We're searching for Napoleon, the gangster. We want to execute him." And the Rebbe said, "If I had him, I would kill him. I hate him. I don't want the French to win. They'll destroy Yiddishkeit. But he's not here." And they heard the Litvisher Rav maledict Napoleon, so they figured, well, there's legitimate, he's not there. They walked away. He saved Napoleon's life. I don't know what he's referring to, but that's the tradition we have. Could be this is a different story, or could be it's the same tradition. Anyway, some stupid guy walked over to Napoleon and said, "How did you feel when your life was saved?" So Napoleon said to his officers, "Lock up this guy, I want to execute him." And they locked him up and they took him out and they put a rope around his neck. And at the last minute, Napoleon says, "Set him free, he did nothing." He says to the guy, "How do you feel now that you were almost executed and I freed you?" "That's the way I felt when I escaped the people who were running after me." So this is exactly what the Menashe Klein says. Only Rabbi, I can't conceive of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein talking like this. I can't conceive of Rabbi Avadya Yosef giving a tshuva like this. But Rabbi Menashe Klein says, this is why we have to get drunk on Purim. We have to experience what the Jews experienced in Persia, in Paras. We have to drink where Achashverosh is Simcha. We have to get so drunk on the Lo Yada. This is the Gemara. This is the feeling. This is the Kiyum. And this is why, even though the first year, and this is Rabbi Menashe Klein speaking now, Rabbah went and almost killed Rabbi Zera, it's not a hetah not to experience it the next year. The next year, it's Purim again. The Chiyuv is on. It's like Pesach. I was once at a Seder many years ago, and it changed my whole practice Seder night. I'll explain. It's very simple. I was at the Seder. We invited over a very elegant lady. She was widowed at that moment, or later she remarries. And she married first time a relative of Rabbi Revel, the second time a relative of the Soloveitchik. She was married to very elegant people, a wonderful lady, Zichrona Levracha. And we had wine on our table and the Dalet Kosot, and she got drunk. And it was a terrible sight to see my children see this elegant lady, a lady we all looked up to. And there she is. When you're drunk, you're drunk. Doesn't mean the next year Rakefet should say, "I'm not having Dalet Kosot next year. I don't want to have this happen again. It's a Chilul Kvod HaTeira." Next year, you got to drink Dalet Kosot. But what I did from that day on, and now I no longer make a Seder. At my age already, I go to my children. But every other Seder I made, there was no wine anywhere near the table. Everything was grape juice. And that's what I can tell you today. You have the sparkling grape juice. Boy, oh boy, if that's, it says, Kasha Lekiddush Havdolah V'Dalet Kosot with five different Hechsherim. I don't know. To me, it's the simplest, most beautiful Dalet Kosot that you could drink. I say the same thing on Israeli matzah. My kids don't appreciate it. They don't realize what American matzah tastes like. It's like cake. You know, like cake. And then you have the beautiful romaine lettuce grown in Gush Katif, healthy, beautiful, big leaves. Boy, do we have it good in Eretz Yisrael al Admat HaKodesh. But this is Rav Menashe Klein's pshat. He's troubled by that Gemara. Like, how can you make a mistake like that again? How can you dare celebrate Purim? How can you bring yourself to kill? But what can you do? There's a Chiyuv. This is Purim. This is Pesach. Year in, year out. Chayav inish l'tzumei v'puya. I'll tell you, this was the greatness of Chazal. They knew how to recreate, how to live, how to feel Yatsati b'Mitzrayim, Nitzalti b'Purim, and this is the Chiyuv. All right, I would agree with Yomo, and we all owe Yomo a thanks, because without him I really could not teach. And we agree with Yomo that if Rabbi Zera was smart, he should have come with a different costume. But I'll tell you, once you know the Gemara Madim, that Mars and the Gemara, that the Rabba has this killer instinct, could very well be that Rabbi Zera felt, even if he dresses up looking like Aaron Rakefet, Rabba would get hysterical and think, wow, this is Amalek. All right. This is what he writes on, as he says, not to waste the paper. Okay, now there's another tshuva dealing with this fascinating topic of getting drunk on Purim. And this tshuva, I'm quoting now, Siman Shin Pei Tet. It's Chelek Yud Chet. Siman Shin Pei Tet, and this tshuva is written to Rav Fisher, the same Rav Fisher that he wrote to, giving a mazel tov. He's now writing on this very topic, and here I'll give you the source, and this too, an interesting question. I'll tell you an interesting story. B'didenu Habiyuvda. These stories are real. It's the early years. I'll give a, you know, when you get older, you feel you're leaving stories that have depth to them. Let me give it in with the full depth. Stern College was established. Girls are coming from outside of New York, unchaperoned, going to Stern College. Stern College was established. What were the exact year? Let me just think. It was in the 50s, so I think it was 54. You can check it out. And, you know, the 50s were different. Someone wrote about in the weekend, I believe it was the Post, about the 50s, the 60s. You don't confuse the 50s with the 60s. The 50s were still a very conservative Western world. The 60s was the world of revolution. The two are not the same. So here you're sending girls at the age of 16, 17 to New York, away from home. So lo and behold, the girl comes from the Boston area. And one of my classmates falls in love with her. And before you know it, there's a wedding. Well, I don't have to tell you, you don't realize the impact that a girl in college getting married to a boy who was first graduating, I believe. Oh, they held a meeting. Are the girls chaperoned? Is someone watching over them in Stern College? How can a girl come to New York and suddenly, face her sophomore year, she's picked out a boy and she's getting married? It caused a storm. And today, people would be so happy. Okay, they came, they're getting married, thank God. We're living in a world where if they don't get married, I don't want to go further. Okay, so the wedding was in Boston. When was the wedding? Motsoi Purim. Shushan Purim. At night. In other words, after Purim, the night of Shushan Purim. Motsoi Purim. Outside of Israel, outside of Jerusalem. And it's the first time I was in Boston. And we went up, I remember, we went up by train, who had cars, and we go up to Boston. It was really a happening for us. And the Rav is Masada Kedushin. And Behein Tzidki, here it is, hours after Purim ended, the Rebbe's Masada Kedushin, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shehakol Niyeh B'dvarav. And we're ready to faint. We couldn't figure out what's going on. Is he drunk? Is it more whiskey? Is it a Kiyum of Purim? We found out later that there wasn't a sealed bottle of wine in the shul where the wedding was. And the Rebbe was apprehensive that the only one there was a non-Jewish janitor, and he had drunk from the wine. You know, non-Jews see a bottle of wine, they know how to drink. And he was apprehensive, Yayin Stam Yenam. So he figured better Chama Medina to make the bracha on whiskey, and where he wouldn't have any problems, any shilas. But now let me ask a simple question. Can you make a wedding on Purim? All right, this was Matzoi Purim. In Israel, it would be Shushan Purim. You couldn't, it was the same Shaila. Can you make a wedding on Purim? And Me'ikar Hadin, you understand, can we make a wedding on Shabbos? Can we make a wedding on a Chag? On a Moed? Absolutely not. Eima Avim Simcha B'Simcha. All right, there may be other problems with writing a ktuvah and making a kinyan on a ktuvah, making a kinyan on the hitchayivut. All right, these are not writing is an isha deraita. You're not going to write, but the other problems, kinyan, are only already surin derabbanan. But can you make a wedding on Purim? And there, it's more a question of the simcha. You have a simcha of Purim. How do you mix in with the simcha of a wedding? I was just in Chol HaMoed. I told you I had an engagement of a grandson. All right, there's no problem with an engagement. It's not the simcha of a wedding, but you couldn't make a wedding. The wedding is going to be on, I think it's right after Shavuos. I'm going to be Esrat Hashem, Mesada Kedushin, and Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim. So it's a new place. I've been Mesada Kedushin already in Yerushalayim, Tel Aviv, Haifa, and the places in between. But this will be a first for me, Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim, which as a kid that we heard about Chafetz Chaim was a dream. Rav Brukenthal, I actually have Malka has family on the kibbutz. Her cousin was married to the aide-de-camp of Kalman Kahana, Rav Kalman Kahana, the Yeti, who became very close to the Chazon Ish. I taught his daughter in Michlala, etc. Oh, wow, what a schut. Can you make a wedding on Purim? So look into, I'm quoting the Shulchan Aruch, Orachayim, Siman Tar Tzav, Tav Reish Tzadi Vav, Sif Chet, Muta Lisa Isha B'Purim, Bein B'Yudalad, Bein B'Tet Vav. You're allowed to get married. Look into the Magen, to the Taz, Sif Katan Dalid, Muta Lisa, the Lodomi Lechag, the Chtiv Visamachta Bechagecha, the Lobi Ishtacha. That it's not a Moed, it's not Pesach, it's not Shvuot, it's not Sukkot. On a Chag, there has to be Simchat HaChag. And that Simcha cannot be diluted, or marred, or compromised, or in opposition, contention with another simcha. So if there's simchat achag, there can't be simcha of taking a wife, with taking a woman. Kimsot chatan al kala, not on yontif. Okay. The Magen Avram discusses the same problem, and he also raises the issue, but he says, no, it's not like Shabbat, it's not like Purim, it's not like Shabbat, it's not like Yontav, that there you have a Simcha, a Sudah, it's Sudat Shabbat, it's Sudat Chag. But it cannot be a Sudat Nesuin. It gets knocked out. But here, with Purim, all right, So the Sudat Nisuin won't be Nikeret, but you mix it up with Purim. But so what? There's no chiyuv that it has to be a total simcha. It's not a concept of samachta, b'chagecha, v'basha, v'yayin, and the main achronim, the main nosei kelim, permit getting married on Purim. Nevertheless, there was an entire school of thought that lachatchila, you don't get married on Purim. There's something that troubles you, bothers you. You're in a simcha, it's Purim, you're rejoicing, you're drunk, you're happy. The simchat nesuin is not going to take place, it's not going to be felt. Wait another day or two, or a day or two earlier. Do it when there's no conflict in emotion, in observance. So you see, even though our pi halacha, we paskin 100% that you're allowed to get married on Purim, it's already a trend from the earliest Rishonim that we're not happy about it, we're not thrilled about it. And they bring down from one of the Ashkenaz Rishonim, the Mari Bruna, who discusses Heicha the Ira Nisuin B'Purim. And he discusses what you do about the Siddha, what you do about the observance if a wedding should fall on Purim. And right away, Reb Menashe Klein raises the issue, how can you have a wedding on Purim? The Shulchan Aruch already paskined you're allowed, but already among the Rishonim and the Nosei Kelim, there was diffidence, there was hesitancy. And here the Mari Bruna is discussing, what do you do if you have a wedding on Purim? Shemi'ira, what does that mean, those words? If perhaps something happened. So you see from the words, it was an accident. It was an anomaly. It was unique. What does it mean? So it could be, and here Rav Menashe Klein is quoting from these tshuvot, earlier tshuvot, people made a mistake. They planned the wedding. They didn't realize it was Purim. All right, how do you make a mistake like that? I can tell you in the state of Israel, there's one tremendous problem that no one has ever paid attention to. The calendar that dominates the state of Israel is the secular calendar. It's the solar calendar. We all, when I write a letter, I always date the letter according to the Pasha. Acharei Motei would be Aleph Achak, Acharei Mot Kedoshim. That's the way you abbreviate. Aleph Chet Kuf. Aleph Achak. But if I'm writing to someone who's illiterate or someone who's non-Jewish, or I'm writing to a government office, next to Aleph Achak, I will put in 18/4/21. That's the date we're working with. The army called us up for basic training on Tainit Esther. No one knew it was Tainit Esther. No one, perhaps at that time, no one cared. They went with a secular date. Time and again, people will make appointments and then they realize, oh no, what did I do? This is Shavuot. You follow the secular date. You look at a secular calendar. It doesn't tell you what the significance is on the Jewish lunar calendar. So he says, Shemi'ira, they looked at a non-Jewish calendar, set a date. It turned out it was Purim, but they went through with the wedding anyway because Me'ikar Hadin, perhaps it's permissible. That's one explanation. He gives a second explanation, and I absolutely love this second explanation because it takes us back to some of my best shiurim ever. And this takes us back to the Rama, Shelet and Shuvet Siman Kuf Chaf Hey 125, takes us back to the Shulchan Aruch Shin Lamed Tet, where it's described in great detail, and it's a case that we have referred to many times over the last 62 years. And what are we talking about? Minig Yisrael was to get married on Friday. I have one wedding coming up when I'm being Mesada Kedushin. It's not a Friday. Baruch Hashem, I may have another great simcha, grandson, getting married. And he already told me yesterday that the girl told him she wants to get married. And I've raised my grandchildren, the bar mitzvah, you're the boss. The wedding, the lady is the boss. You had a bar mitzvah. A wedding, you're only... role is to decide who the Masada Kedushin is. That belongs to the Chatan Alpi Minig Yisrael. Outside of that, you keep your mouth shut and let the girl do what she wants. It's your wife to be. Honor her, respect her, and let her set the picture, the details. So he already told me yesterday that she wants to get married a Milchika Sudah on a Friday morning. I told him nothing can make me happier than Friday morning a Milchika Sudah. Wow! Minig Yisrael, they got married on Friday. Why did they get married on Friday? You all know why. So the Sudat Shabbos would be the Sudat Nesuin, and all the poor people would have a Sudah, have what to eat. It's not like today that we are billionaires. We have all the food in the world for pennies. You don't realize Eze Medina Yesh Lanu Kan. All right? So there was the famous case, remember, where the Rama was Masada Kedushin 5 hours after Shabbat began. And he said, the world is murmuring after me, calling me a sheikh. It's a nice vaf a pushtak. And the Ramar explains, and it's a sad story, but these are human beings. Halavai, we should all be B'nai Teira and love Torah, and our only desire in life should be L'kadei Shem Shemayim and live like good Jews and always to do good. And people should see who we are. Kizera Ei V'kadesh. But humans are not like that. What can I tell you? What can I tell you? It's very sad what I've seen in life on this level. So the guy at the ketuvah, and she was an orphan, the girl was an orphan, her brothers were handling it, not enough money in the dowry. And he said, I don't care that the ketuvah is written, I don't care that it's Friday's date, go fly a kite. No tiki, no washi. That's what the Chinese used to say when you picked up your laundry, you didn't have a ticket, you couldn't get your wash back. We want double the price of money. And he refused to go to chuppah. And this was the story I told you, that the Rama worked, influenced, spoke. Finally, 5 hours after Shabbat began, they reached a compromise and he agreed to go to chuppah. So it could be, he says, this was the same story. The wedding was really before Purim. Everything should have been accomplished on Yud Gimel. Everything should have been accomplished before Purim. But it took a long time till the Chatan agreed to go to Chuppah. He was adamant, money, money, money. HaKesev Yanet HaKol. Finally, when he agreed, Ira, that's the Lashon, it happened that the wedding was on Purim. And I have to tell you, I know a case like that from the greater Ramaz family, where a kindergarten teacher was finally getting married. She was an orphan, limited means, and from the Haredi world. and the Chatan from the Haredi world. And at the wedding, he carried on, not enough money. He wanted $10,000 more. And I heard the story from eyewitnesses, and they're waiting, and they find out what's happening. And one man wrote out a check for $10,000. He said not to embarrass a Jewish girl. These tzaddikim wrote out a check for $10,000, and they went to chuppah. And this is, he had the money, he's not a poor man. He's given great tzedakah. He gives Sifrei Torah all over. And that girl that arranged the wedding and saved her, covered her honesty, her dignity, how would you feel to sit there? But in the Haredi world, I know another case, I don't want to mention, it's a friend of mine, he's no longer alive. Family never forgave him also. It was a story of a wedding held up, more money. It's so different than my concept of wedding and love and marriage and Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim, everyone interprets it allegorically, but you make a mistake. You can interpret allegorically, but the first pshat has to be the simple pshat, Ein Mikra Yotzei. You can't change from the basic pshat. All right, the allegorical interpretations, the drush, the pardes, beautiful. But that's after Mikra Kepshuto. But this is so different than my concept, the Torah concept, the concept I saw the Rav and his wife, Reb Moshe and his wife, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky was married twice, Reb Avram Pam. It's a different world. But this is the pshat. He brings down, I love it, he makes the reference to the Shivat HaRama. Maybe that's what happened here, that the same thing could have happened at this wedding. Now, I want to give cover to the person who wrote the check for $10,000. It was Ira Rennett. I can mention the name. There's nothing to be ashamed of here. I taught his sons in BMT decades ago. And Ira Rennett, as you know, he gives Sifrei Torah all over. And that God have mercy, anyone who falls in battle, he gives a Sefer Torah, a terrorist attacks. He immortalizes people who gave their life that we should be able to sit and learn Torah in Yerushalayim. A tzaddik yisod olam, in my humble opinion. And this was not tax-free money. It's not money that you can claim, you know, the United States government, you share with me. Here, an outright gift, the kala should not be embarrassed. And I can tell you, I heard the story from Irvin Shapiro. Irvin was at the wedding, and I mean Irvin Shapiro, Neman Alai Kemeya Edom, and he told me the story, and I may even be wrong with the sum, maybe it's more than 10,000, but this is, I reread it. All right, let me just go one step further. And so what happens? So they called Hagat Maimonides. All the sources are here in the Tshuva. And if you have a wedding on Purim, if it happens in Iran, if it happens for whatever the reasons, you can have a wedding on Purim. Yes, the Shulchan Aruch Paskim, not to, but that's lachatchila, that's a motion. But b'diavad, if you have it, you have it. So if you have the wedding on Purim, you read the Megillah b'vayit hachatan v'kala. That if you read, if you have the wedding on Purim, I'm quoting now from Sefer HaRokach, Hilchat Purim, Shekata v'zeleshono, v'imiran, nesuin b'Purim, yikra'u b'veit hachatn v'akala, shem ba'asara, o yikra levadi, levado, kach ra'iti. And this is the exact lashon. You have the wedding, read the Megillah in the house of the Chatan V'Kala, make a minyan, and be the other, if you can't make a minyan, let the Chatan read it by himself. Now, first, let's just analyze this psak. Why, if the Chatan can read it by himself, why do you need a minyan? Why is a minyan preferable? Because in relation to Purim, there's another concept, Berov Am Hadrat Melech, that better to go, if you have a choice, Purim, one shul, you go to two different shuls. One shul, there are 100 people. The other shul, there are 1,000 people. Could be it's better to go to the shul with 1,000 people, Berov Am Hadrat Melech. I'm not pasking Allah, I mean, this is discussed. I mean, on the other hand, you can say, look, it's a minyan, and this shul I'm more comfortable in. But there is a concept, the bigger the minyan, the bigger the cover to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I need not tell you, this is common sense. When people will write, Rakefet gave a shir, there were 10 people there. Rakefet gave a shir, there were 1,000 people there. Obviously, you're giving more cover to the person giving the shir if you say there were 1,000 people, all right? So, Allah had kama v'kama to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Barov Am Hadrat Melech. All right? So that's why a minyan is preferable. If you can't get a minyan together, let the Chatan read the Megillah himself. All right, this is taken for, this assumes that the average person could open up a kosher Megillah. We're not talking here about reading it from a sefer. We're talking about reading it from a klaf. The average person was capable of opening up a klaf and reading the Megillah. But there's one simple question you have to ask. And why can't the Chatan go to shul? What are we talking about? Yes, an avel lahavdil between a simcha to avelut, an avel, there's a special halacha that latchatchila he shouldn't leave his house. You all know we try to make a minyan in the avel's house. We bring a sefer Torah, minig Yisrael is to bring a sefer Torah for 3 leinings. So, generally speaking, in order to accomplish that you have 3 leinings in another house, you lay in Shabbos afternoon. I trust you're aware of that. That's Minig Yisrael, that Avelet, you lay in Monday, you lay in Thursday, you lay in Shabbos afternoon. When Rosh Chodesh falls during the week, obviously it ameliorates having to make a minyan Shabbos afternoon. But that's a special halacha in Avelut. And even in Avelut, if you can't get a minyan together, you go to shul. We just had in my house the Avelut for Dershowitz. So the 2 boys are sitting shiva there. They wound up going to the shtiblachta. And they told me why. That if they were sitting in their own homes, they have friends all over the place, they would make a minyan in a second. But here, it was a problem. In my building, they're older people, they can't get up early. There's a guy like Rakefet who gets up too early. And it was a problem pulling a minyan together. And they don't live. I understood them. So they said it was first posted, then they canceled. They went to the shtiblach. No problem whatsoever. All right, b'diavad, we go. But that's by a novel where latchatchila you're asking the question, can he go to shul? But by Purim, by a chatan, what's the problem with his going to shul? Let him go on Purim. Why does he have to make the minyan in his house? And why, ad kedei kach, that even where he has no minyan, don't leave the house, lay in the Megillah on your own, lo aleinu, like the Corona era. How many of us wound up in shul this year? How many were hesitant? Our biggest problem was that a year ago, we didn't realize on Purim how serious Corona is, how many people died as a result of going to shul on Purim. It's an absolute fact, infected, etc. My dear students, what a beautiful question. We will answer the question and take us into the world of a chatan and kala and what it's about. Be'ezrat Hanotein L'ayahov Koach, 1 week from now. And then we roll further into another question, and anyone who's under 21 years of age and not married will not be allowed into the shir. Understand me, Ellie? Plain and simple. I'm going to show you a source that you will go crazy. Why the Haredi world that has the ability to censor tshuvot, like if you open up the new edition of the Lamed Lahoel, the one of the Kohen Kiyoret is not there. How this tshuva still remains around in the Noda B'Yehuda. And that once again will depress us, because we'll see that even though we received the Torah, so few of us are really B'nai Terah. How many of us can say our entire life, B'chol Nafshecha, B'chol Levavecha, B'chol Nafshecha, B'chol Meodecha, is devoted to Torah Hashem Tamima? Wow. The old days, I would have charged to the IOU list for showing you that tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda. But after Corona and my conversations with people in the other world, next world, wonderful world, I hope, no charge. Jack ripped up the IOU list. Tomorrow's class, one of a kind. I wouldn't miss it for all the rice that is consumed in Israel on Pesach by the Eidot HaMizrach. By the way, at the engagement party, I think I told you I didn't have to watch out for rice. That branch of the Moroccan families don't eat rice. But there were green peas, and I also saw kidney beans. And then I was told my daughter taught them what they can make, what they can't make. But I guess the grandmothers figured, if we've been eating this for so many years and we come from so many Kedoshei Elyon, Moroccan Rabbanim, why can't we eat it here in Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim? So I just had to be careful, but Baruch Hashem, the food was there. My dear students, what we do today? All right, the Chayav Inish Latsumi Vapuya, the Gemara about Madim, Rabbah, that solves the whole problem of the Kirsa'at, Rava, Rabbah, and it shows you that we can't dismiss Reb Menashe Klein's pshat so easily. Could be it's not Purim Torah. Could be that he wants to show that when you're a murderer, you have to be a murderer in a holy fashion. And to get rid of Amalek, that is fabulous. Again, I'm not advocating getting rid of Amalek. All of you know the Achronim deal with this. They say that in the Davar Hazera, we don't have pure Amalek today. The Rav, however, felt Amalek. He quoted Rav Moshe, Rav Chaim, it's not a din in real Amalek. It's a din in your thinking. If you think like Amalek, you are Amalek. And all right, there's a lot of truth to be said for that. Halavai, we would have had a state of Israel before Hitler began. We went into the whole question of how do you have a wedding on Purim? Fascinating question. And Meikar Hadin, you see, you are allowed. However, you're right, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, not to Ein Ma'arim Simcha B'Simcha. It's not real concept of Yontif, but nevertheless, we can understand it emotionally. Yet, in Ira, and we got involved with what does that mean? And it could very well be like the Tshuvat Harama, which once again takes us back to a sad comment on Jewish males. And we suffer with that today. I need not tell you the Aguna question haunts us. And leaving Agunot, self-inflicted Agunot, or man-made Agunot, wanting money to give a get. I've been involved in cases like that. And I can tell you, I had a case in Baltimore, and I thank Eli Schlesberg, one of the leading, if not the leading, balabas in Baltimore, should live and be well. We're friendly, and he went to work for me, and the get didn't go for nothing, but at least it went for a lot less than the original sum of money. But the fact that you have to pay for a get, that itself, that's the yeshiva boy, that's his mind, money. But all right, I hope to the credit of YU that our graduates don't have to hold up people for money. We all have professions, we have something beyond, and we can do and accomplish. Okay, I just want to mention how sad it is. This is a Paschweiler that was up all in Meir Sharim Geula. And I mentioned to Eli Schlesberg, he's trying to achieve peace. We think the same way, that it shouldn't matter what our scupper is. What unites us is infinitely more important than that which divides us. He's trying to achieve peace between our gooder and people like Aaron Rakefet. And I wrote to him, you want to see how deep the split is? Look at Yom HaTzmut in Yehuda V'Shomron and in Geula Meir Sharim. So all over Geula Meir Sharim, signs were up from Satma, B'Pkudata Yanei Kilatenu Shlita Yomru Tachnun B'Yom Chamishi Afim Yesh Brit O Baal Brit U'Kedoma Ba'Otom Minyan. That in what they call Yom Hamava Hanimha, the worst day, Hei Ya. So this year it was 2 days earlier, right? It was on Thursday, Yom Hatzchag Atzmaut. So you must say Tachnun, even if there's a Brit, if it's a Baal Brit, a Sandek, any Simcha whatsoever, that naturally you wouldn't say Tachnun. People shouldn't be Cheshesh that you're skipping Tachnun because of Chag Atzmaut.
You see their matzah in Medina, because they do it on Thursday
and Shabbos. So they matzah what the Medina,
yeah.
They went
to
the...
I walk around Meir Sharim every day, I did not see those Russian movies. I see that some of them could be made up.
No, it's not made up. This was a photograph from a wall, you see the background. Anyway, I want to show you one beautiful picture here. Who is that? Who is that? Who is that? That's Jonathan Pollard and Zephat Sadik Mendelovich. That's together at the Haknasat Sefer Torah that Pollard wrote a Sefer Torah while he was in jail. He paid for it to give to Kevi Yosef in Shechem, and he gave it a few days ago, and at the Simcha, that's Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik, this is a Jew beyond our conception. He wrote me an email the other day, you almost saw it, that few people appreciate what they went through. He tells stories in jail. They're people only want to listen today. It hurts, but all right, life moves on. I'll be Malamed Skut. But I have copies here if anyone wants. Okay, are there any questions from the students in front of me? Okay, so I want to say until we meet again tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Yomo, can you open it up to the world if there are any questions? Let me put this away.
The recording has stopped.
Okay. Are there any questions? Are they unmuted?
Not yet, almost. Wait a second.
How's Ariane?
Good.
Good. Send best regards.
Everyone was asked to unmute.
Does anyone have a question?
Everyone can unmute themselves now.
Unmute yourself if you have a question. Is there any question? I can't. We miss Morty.
Oh, 1 second. Okay, now they can unmute.
Now you can unmute, I'm told.
Rebbe. Yeah. Rebbe, good morning. Yoshua Grunstein.
Yeah.
Rebbe, just to after your share, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach got married in 1930 on Purim in Yerushalayim, which was an Erev Shabbos. So you have both in the same
Purim
day.
And Erev Shabbos. But Erev Shabbos was not the problem. Purim. But that's interesting. You're sure he got married on Purim? Because yes. It goes against the Pesach.
100% sure. The Masada Kedushin was Rav Kook.
Right, that I know.
Was it Purim de Mukafas?
Purim de Mukafas in Yerushalayim, Tetvav Adar, he got married.
Tetvav. Very interesting. So it shows you that they went against the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch was considered only a Lachat Chila, but if there were reasons why, they went against the Pesach. Okay, so that explains him, Ira. And and we're dealing now with the question of why did he go to shul for a minyan? What did he do? We don't know. The Megillah.
That far is not recorded.
Not recorded. Yashikayach on the information. Very interesting.
Rebbe, what doesn't make sense? Purim Dimukafas can't fall on Friday.
Well, Purim
Dimukafas. Yes, it can. It can happen, it's going to happen next year, Dr. Licht. It happens quite often.
Okay.
Yeah, Purim.
The next day would be the first day of Pei. Just a minute. Vav, Zav. Okay, it can. I'm one day off.
It can. I know it's a fact that happened. David, yeah?
Yeah.
Any year that Pesach comes out Friday night, Purim in Yerushalayim will be
right,
on Friday.
Right. Yes, Rabbi Tversky.
I was going to say, regarding the expression Bahavain in Mishnah Halakos, I did a search in the Bar Ilan for Mishnah Halakos. There was 1,263 times where he says Bahavain. A few of those times was Bahaben, you know, the son. But the overwhelming number was Bahavain, so he uses it quite often.
Right, so you can't read into it. To say that it means Purim Tori means Fashtei Megut, Fashtei Mitif. That's what it means. Mark Mina, I want to...
When he talked about Kaslovich, did you mean the Alta Rebbe was hidden in Kaslovich?
The Alta Rebbe. What did I say? Napoleon?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I meant the Alta Rebbe. Thank you for the correction. Of course, Napoleon was on my mind, but the story is with the Alta Rebbe, of course.
I couldn't hear clearly. It sounds like someone asked it, but when they put the thing up to say Tachnun on Thursday, would they respect the decision of the Rabbanut to be mocked him?
Right. That's what Eli said.
He said.
Rav
Kelmer, by the way, knew the Rav from when he was Mardat, Rav Yom Israel Brooklyn.
Of course, he knew the Rav from
his... I co-ran a Shabbaton there when he was the Rav. Right. Years ago. Is it possible that Rav Zera sounded like Zera Amalek?
No one says that. No one says that. But it's Purim Torah, but it's spelled differently. No one says that.
It's good that he didn't know the Zera Amalek that were learning today, Brock.
Very good. Good
to say.
Did
Rav Shach's son... You were talking with the brothers. Rav Shach's son teaching yeshiva Flatbush.
What about his son? Effie Shach taught in Flatbush with vice principal.
Right.
But it doesn't make him Zera Amalek.
No, when you talk about the brothers that went different drachim.
All right. That's an example of... it's a lot to talk about there, unfortunately.
Yesterday I davened mincha for the Yamid, so before I started, Professor Hofer, who davens in the minyan, came up to me and he said, we don't say tepascha today.
Right. So in my shul...
I was going to ask the same question. I didn't know if I should say it. I davened in the yichidus, because I'm going to only outdoor minyanim, and I'm careful about it. I didn't know if I should say tepascha, because there was one year that we said... we were mocked him, and then we heard that Rav Goren said to say Alalot Shabbos, not to be mocked. Yerushalayim fell the day after the Bechirot. The day before the Bechirot. And Hatzofer adds that you don't mock the Tefillot because of Bechirot. You do it before Shabbos, but not for Bechirot.
I can tell you, in my shul, what happened was very interesting. At the first minyan, at least, 6:30, the chazan said Abba Rachamim, and people yelled out that not to. In the afternoon, the chazan did not say Tzidka Tzedek, and one of the gabayim, who's Chabadnik, yelled out Tzidka Tzedek. Anyway, halacha l'maisa, I didn't say Abba Rachamim, said Tzidka Tzedek. In the morning, the chazan did, in the afternoon, the chazan did not.
But let me tell you. The people say Avarachim on Yom HaTzvot, the way they say it on the day when you say Lid Yiskar. So I said it's not a reason not to say it, since you would say it on Yom HaTzvot anyway.
You would say Yiskar. Anyway, we YU people have a different problem. Heschel Shechter Paskin a few years ago, that you don't listen to the Rabbanut, that Hei Yah, you have to say the Hallel, and then you certainly cannot say Tachman. Anyway, Halacha
L'maisa. That was
anyway, what the Rabbanut Rasha did is fabulous, and I don't have any problem with it. Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Aleph, Tetvav. When I grew up, we didn't say Tachnun from Yud Aleph Adaran, and you understand why? I tried to do it in my shul. I was davening next to the chief rabbi, Egyptian Rabbi Kulitz. We were good friends, and Rabbi Kulitz said to me, no, no, you have to say Tachlin. He wouldn't accept what I was telling. I said, I grew up among frummies. But Baruch Hashem, they didn't say Tachnan. All right, it's a psychological mental block. I write with, or in you look into the Rav, where the Rav states how why Hasidim don't want to say Tachnan. People whose whole relationship with Torah is joy and happiness, it's hard for them to say Tachnan. There was a shul in England where there were light system. It's near Israel in Hendon. It's the first time I ever saw it. Lights telling you, you do say Tachman, you don't say Tachman. Why you're not saying Tachman? It tells you it's Avelut, or it tells you it's Chatan Kala. It's a and finally, in Noel Aaron, where I davened when I don't even want to, with the Corona deal, so when I was recovering and could start going to Minyan again, I was going to a 6:30 minyan, and first time signs. I never saw anything like it. What you say, what you don't say, and ein omrim tachnun hayom. See what he's saying.
He says,
I heard in the name of Rav David, although I'm not sure if it's authentic, if it's apocryphal, that he said halal for the medina and tachnun for the memshala.
No, they say I'm like David. I'm a tzaddik like David Ben Gurion. I don't say Hala. I don't say Tachman.
Reb David Lifshitz.
Reb David Lifshitz. I say what is so again?
I don't know if it's authentic or not. All right. There's a story that he was in L.A. once. His daughter, I think, told me that he was in L.A. once, and he went to a shtiba, which turned out to be Satmar, and she said, knowing his hashgacha, he never would have gone there had he known that it was Satmar.
Anyway, I want to tell you, it's amazing how the human mind works, that I was telling the story Napoleon, and I used the example of the Rav, and I totally put Napoleon in place of the Alter Rebbe. But take my words and just knock out Napoleon with the Chasidlevich study and put in the Alter Rebbe. Jack, what is Jack? What is Jack saying? Yomo.
I lost track of who did the Bar Ilan search. The word is
Rabbi Tversky. Rabbi Yitzchak Tversky did the search.
Yeah, so it's the word is maybe I'm pedantic, maybe it makes no difference. He searched for the Havain and the Mishnah Halacha used the word Binyavin. It may be significant.
One second. And what does he say here, you're saying?
In the Shuva, he used the word v'yavim, not v'havim. May make no difference. Maybe it does. I'd like to know how many times Mishneh Halachot used the word v'yavim.
But doesn't v'havim? When Ezra wants to say something, but he doesn't want to say it, doesn't he say v'yavim, like Hamaskil Yavim, something like that?
Right, but here he says v'havim, and understand.
I checked this, at the end of the shul, it was v'yavim, not v'havim.
Here it says in v'havim, where do you say v'yavim?
No, we dress up like Amalek, or a reserve. Where Brazier dressed up like Amalek, then in that section he says Binyamin.
Where?
And I don't know. I may be making too much out of it, but maybe not.
Vahavim.
He says Vahavim.
I'm gonna look it up again. I'm pretty sure it says Binyamin.
In this edition it says Vahavim.
Rabbi Tversky, did you want to say anything?
Yeah,
I think
right.
I heard Rabbi Tversky's voice.
Yeah, you're right. My memory's no good. Okay.
A few weeks ago, you mentioned the Vadelier of St. Louis, Rabbi Ripkin.
Right.
I come to my mission, they changed their Hechsher symbol. It used to be an OV, a V and a zero in an O, but it's very close to the deacon symbol, so now they have an OKV. I saw it, and it was from that area, and I guessed that what it might be. So I called a friend who's the administrator of Divided Kansas City, and he verified it.
But one second, but it's their Hashgacha.
Yeah, it's the Vanhu year, which used to be the Rabbanut, but they never appointed a chief rabbi after Rabbi Rifkin.
Interesting.
So it's called the Vanhu year, H-O-I-E-R.
All right,
it looks like an OKV, a little calligraphy in there.
Okay,
it used to be a V in a circle.
Okay,
now you have to be careful. A V in a circle usually means vegan now.
We have to clear the room and sign off. I want to thank you all for joining with me today. And Mark Wiener, anything new on your desires with the Gris Kollel?
Well, I guess they're working on it. There's different things. YU is, the VA has a GA Bill site, and YU's on the site, except for foreign schools, the branches or campuses have to be signed up separately. So I think they're working on that. And then the question is registration, when to start. It's technical stuff because I'm using a GI Bill. And then there's the whole visa stuff. Thank God Sherry's involved with that. So I'm juggling different things. So we'll see what's what.
All right. Everything should be Levesura Tovet Shields when I come out the lane of Al-Kol Yisrael. Das Vidanya.
What is Rav Dorfman doing?
We don't know anything further. He was hospitalized. As far as I know, he's not out of the hospital.
He made a statement from the hospital, but he's not well, but he's doing better. He thanked everybody for
Okay. Killing.